Jean-Jacques Rousseau was a very brilliant man. He had a very, very powerful mind, and he's had a lot of influence on people. Let's look at a few of the things that he believed, that he, with his brilliant mind, thought to be the truth. He thought that people are born good. We're essentially born with a very good nature, but we're corrupted by family, and we're corrupted by the social institutions around us. But children just need that inner goodness to be able to flourish and not be corrupted by family and not be corrupted by those other similar social institutions. His solution was that children will do best in government care. Children are going to flourish when they don't have parents as the primary caregivers, but when government is doing most of the training and most of the educating. He also believed that the real will of the people is found in its government, in its national government. And he also believed that sex without marriage is healthy and right. These were some of the beliefs that Rousseau held and that he taught and that other people share in very widely nowadays. Now, as we look at Rousseau's beliefs, I'd like to take a look at some of Rousseau's behaviors. Rousseau sponged off others for most of his life. He did very little actual labor to earn a living, but he borrowed and lived off of others. Eventually, he inherited his family's wealth and got the money from his father. Before that inheritance, an old woman saved him from poverty four different times. After he inherited the money and was quite wealthy, she fell on hard times, and he let her die without helping her. He believed that charity was a one-way street, and the street led to him, but not the other direction. He used his mistress for pleasure and not for love. In his own writings, he made no pretense about that. He said, "She was just there for my physical pleasure. I had no interest in her as a person." But of course, she did have some children. And Rousseau abandoned five children to a state orphanage where only 5% of the kids lived to adulthood. It just had an extremely high mortality rate. Now, consider these behaviors. He was a lazybones who sponged off others, who used them and then didn't help them in return. He used even his own mistress for pleasure, and he abandoned his kids. Now, if somebody acts like that, it's pretty handy to believe that government care is the best care of children, and not parental care, because he didn't want to be a parent. He just wanted to ditch the kids. And so his behavior helped produce his theory. His behavior led to certain kinds of beliefs. Those beliefs were originally formulated partly as excuses, and they became appealing to many other people because many other people behave the same way and find it convenient, if they don't want to put all the time into caring for children, to let the government handle it. If they don't want to be responsible for marriage, say, "Hey, sex without marriage is fine. I'm going to use my various mistresses or men for whatever pleasure I want. I'm going to use others, and I'm just going to consider that I'm naturally good. And it's just wonderful that I'm able to use others because I'm such a good person." Well, behavior affects belief. It shapes belief. And the Bible makes this very clear. It says, "The path of the righteous is like the light of dawn, which shines brighter and brighter until full day." When you're walking in the way of righteousness, it's brighter. You see more and more. You live better and better. The way of the wicked is like deep darkness. They do not know over what they stumble. To be wicked is to make yourself more and more blind, to enter into deeper and deeper darkness, and to not know. Notice those words, "they do not know." Wickedness in behavior can lead to not knowing in belief. Evil men do not understand justice, but those who seek the Lord understand it completely. Notice again, the understanding is based on what kind of person they are and what they're doing. Wisdom is knowing through doing. Throughout the book of Proverbs, there's this emphasis again and again on the practical nature of knowledge in Proverbs. And so you know through doing, not just doing what you know, but when you do stuff, it shapes the way you think. We sometimes think of it only in as one-way traffic, where I think something and then I make up my mind based on what I think. But very often, what I'm doing shapes how I'm thinking. And so the traffic runs two ways. Knowing does shape doing, but doing also shapes knowing. Now, we've been looking at, in a few talks, about things that shape your mind. Looking at social setting is one of those. The people you hang out with, the people you fit in with or occasionally fight with, and they're going to have an impact on your thoughts and beliefs. And now I want to emphasize the impact that your actions, that your pattern of behavior has on your mind and on your beliefs, on what you consider your knowledge. And then in another talk, we're going to talk about your heart, the deepest motives of your inner self, and how that, too, shapes the mind. The heart shapes the mind. But today we're going to focus especially on how actions, patterns of behavior, shape the mind. And so let's focus on that in particular and see some of these things. Just to take a few examples, you have a person who's a workaholic. He's always busy. He's always on the job. And he ends up being a business tycoon. And what does he believe? He believes that free enterprise blesses everybody. Do you think it might have something to do with the fact that it made him a ton of money? And that work, 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 work is his way of life. A slave driver back a century or two ago believed slaves were less than human. And that Scripture, the Bible, was in favor of slavery. Do you think that those beliefs might have had anything to do with the fact that he was a slave driver and that he profited from owning slaves? Today, many live-in couples who just move in and shack up together, they believe that living together makes a good marriage more likely, that if you experiment, if you live together for a while first and then get married, you're a lot more likely to have a good marriage than if you stay apart and don't get sexually involved until after the wedding ceremony. Now, this is an absolutely false belief. You would not have to believe the Bible. You would just have to know a little bit of sociology and the fact that the divorce rate is much higher among those who live together first. And also, of course, the fact that you live together first is almost like a divorce when you tear apart from each other again. But anyway, they believe that living together first makes a good marriage more likely, and they believe it simply because that's what they happen to be doing. And so the behavior leads to the belief. The belief is certainly not based on sound evidence or data. Another example, a man who is kind of a control freak and likes to run everything and have everybody do what he says and wants his wife to be his servant and his children always to do whatever he wants and never even think a different thought. Many people like that believe that the Bible teaches total patriarchy, that the man is the complete leader in everything and he does all the thinking for the household. Well, he holds that belief because it suits his pattern of conduct. On the other hand, you can get children who believe their parents are just very unfair, and some parents are unfair. But some children believe their parents are unfair even when they're not because the children are rebelling. They reach a certain kind of belief based on how they've been behaving lately, and they need a belief that fits in comfortably with that behavior. You find people who go off to college and they start partying like crazy, and they decide that the Bible is outdated. And it might not even be anything that a particular professor said to them or any evidence that was brought their way. But they have just left the home life where maybe they were taught some things from the Bible, and now they want to live a different way. And all of a sudden, the Bible is outdated. Well, it's their action that leads to a change in belief. There was a young woman who was talking to a pastor about her own loss of faith after she had gone to college. She had grown up in a church-going family, thought she believed some things, but now after she'd been in college for the better part of a year, she decided that the Bible, pretty shaky at best, and probably not true. Well, the pastor asked her, when did you start to feel that way? Was there a particular time, you know, when you just kind of started to realize that the Bible isn't true? And she said, yeah, it was kind of around last November. And the pastor said, well, if you think back to last November, is there anything else that kind of happened in last November that is of interest? And the girl thought for a moment, and then she started to cry. And she said, well, that's about the time I started sleeping with my boyfriend. And the girl knew that the Bible said that sex is for marriage. She knew she was going against the Bible. And so all of a sudden, the Bible's outdated. All of a sudden, it's hard to believe. Her behavior changed before her belief changed to match it. Jesus made it very clear that evildoers avoid light and truth doers seek light. Jesus said the light has come into the world and people loved the darkness rather than the light because their works were evil. For everyone who does wicked things hates the light and does not come to the light lest his works should be exposed. That's how bad works can lead to bad belief. When you're doing bad stuff, you don't want to get too close to God. It's been said that either the Bible will keep you from sin or sin will keep you from the Bible. But, says Jesus, whoever does what is true comes to the light so that it may be clearly seen that his works have been carried out in God. When you're serving and working for the Lord, you enjoy coming into God's presence. You enjoy coming to God and thanking him for his activity in your life and the things he's been accomplishing in you. And you're less eager to come to God when you've been disobeying him and you don't want to admit it. Evildoers avoid light. Truth doers seek light. And notice that phrase, they are doing the truth. Whoever does what is true. Don't we usually describe it as believing what's true or thinking what's true or knowing what's true? Jesus says whoever does what is true. There is doing the truth. You're a truth doer. And as you're a truth doer, you become a stronger truth believer as well. It's kind of like this. It's like driving with a windshield that has mud all over it. You are driving through a very muddy area and there's mud splattering all over your windshield and your wipers on the glass aren't working very well and you've got mud. And you've got a few streaks. You can still see a little bit, but boy, there's a lot that you can't see very well. That's what sin does. Sin splatters a whole bunch of mud on your mind. Filthy living gets your mind all messy. And you might try to wipe it a little bit, and you still have a conscience, and there still are ideas that may get through here and there, ideas of truth. But many, many important facts and truths of God are just not visible to you anymore. Because there's so much mud on your windshield. So much filthy living has splattered mud on how we see. And Jesus said, men love darkness rather than light because their deeds are evil. We just can't see through our windshields because there's so much mud on them. Sin blocks knowledge. Weak women, says the Bible, who are burdened with sins and led astray by various passions are always learning and never able to arrive at a knowledge of the truth. Now, why is it that they've always got ideas coming their way, this particular kind of women, and they're looking at these different ideas, but none of them ever sticks? They can't arrive at the knowledge of the truth, even though they're always trying to learn stuff. It's because they're burdened with sins and led astray by various passions. And it also speaks of men, not just women, men who oppose the truth. And these men are corrupted in their mind and disqualified regarding the faith. And earlier it describes the wicked behavior of these men. And it is their behavior, their sin, that's blocking their knowledge. When you yourself are thinking about, why am I having such a hard time believing things about the Bible or about Jesus? You may say, well, I have lots of intellectual objections. I've considered the evidence. There's a lot of important things. And intellectually, I just can't swallow it. Well, maybe. Or maybe you've been corrupted in mind. And you're opposing the truth because you've been sinning. Or maybe you've been burdened with sins and that keeps you from arriving at the truth. And this is also very important when we're talking with other people. If you're a Christian and you're speaking with someone else and they keep trotting out various arguments and objections to believing in Christianity, you might be able to help them with some intellectual things that are important, but you may also reach the point where you say, now, let's just suppose that I could show you that the Bible is true and that all of your objections were phony. Would you become a follower of Jesus then? Would you devote your life to obeying Him? More than once, the answer that you might get, and it's happened often, is, well, no. They're playing an intellectual game when they're debating the faith, but their real problem is they say they've got intellectual objections, but even if they didn't, they would not change the way they live. Their sin is blocking their knowledge. To see clearly, your lens has got to be clean. If you're looking through a telescope and you want to see the beautiful stars, you can't have that thing covered with fog and mud. You're just not going to see anything. And so, too, your very self is an instrument for perceiving the things of God. And that self will be unable to perceive those things if there's a lot of sin blocking your view. You need the Lord, and you need Him to clean up that view in order to see clearly in the first place. Another aspect of this, of doing the truth, is you either need to follow it or you're going to forget it. The Apostle James says, if anyone is a hearer of the word and not a doer, he's like a man who looks intently at his natural face in a mirror. For he looks at himself and he goes away and at once forgets what he was like. But the one who looks into the perfect law, the law of liberty, and perseveres, being no hearer who forgets, but a doer who acts, he will be blessed in his doing. A hearer who forgets or a doer who acts? If you look in a mirror and you get up in the morning and your face is a mess and for a minute you notice, but then you just head off into your day without changing anything, that's pretty stupid. Most of us need to act on what we see in the mirror, but if we don't, we'll just go ahead and we'll keep on doing it, and other people might see it in us. God certainly sees how we look, but we are just doing our thing. Doing shapes how we behave. And the one who does what is right is blessed. The one who does what's wrong soon finds himself forgetting the things he was supposed to be doing. It's that way in a lot of life, isn't it? 30 years ago, I learned the German language. I was at college. I took quite a few courses in German. I learned to speak German. I learned to read in German. And I know almost no German today. Why is that? You might say, well, you're kind of dumb. You just don't have a very good memory. Most people don't have a very good memory with things that they don't use, and I haven't been using German much. Greek, I learned 30 years ago, but I use Greek when I study the New Testament, when I'm preparing for sermons, I read some Greek in my private devotions, and so Greek sticks with me because I use it. That's kind of a picture of what faith is like. If you use the truth, it sticks in your memory because you're always paying attention to it and you're living by it. If you go years and decades without living in God's ways, then even if you did have some knowledge, it gets weaker and weaker. And even if it doesn't pass entirely out of memory, it seems less and less real to you, because that's the way it is with truth. You use it or you lose it. You follow it or you forget it. Obeying aids understanding. The prophet and statesman Daniel said, "None of the wicked shall understand, but those who are wise shall understand." He made it clear that God's revelation of what was going to come would be available only to the ones who were living the wise life and not to the ones who were living the wicked life. And so sometimes you may say, you know what? I would change my behavior if I were persuaded that God is real. If I knew for sure that Jesus rose from the dead, then I would change. But What am I supposed to do if I can't believe? Well, how about this? In some cases, if you have just the slightest glimmering or possibility of faith, start acting as though you believe. Start acting as though God is real. Start behaving as though Jesus did die and rise from the dead, as though He did pay for your sins and overcome the power of death. Start acting as you would if all of that is true, and as if Christ is real. And if you start acting as though it's real, you just might start believing more strongly. Don't automatically assume that first you're going to believe more strongly and then behavior will be improved. Of course it's important to believe. Of course it's important to trust in God's promises and to know the facts of the Bible. But sometimes behavior will precede belief. At least behavior will get your belief to be stronger and stronger. Jesus put it this way, if anyone's will is to do God's will, he will know whether the teaching is from God or whether I'm speaking on my own authority. You need to be seeking God's will. You need to be doing God's will, and then, and only then, will you know whether Jesus is just another guy speaking on his own authority or whether Jesus really is God with us. Obeying aids understanding. And we need to understand this. Rousseau did not understand it. He lived a certain way and then spun out certain beliefs that would fit the way he wanted to behave. And so it is with many of us. When you start living the fruit of the Spirit, it becomes more and more real to you, the things of God. Jesus leaves no wondering about the importance of belief and its relation to behavior. If you do not want to behave according to the way of Christ, you will not be able to believe according to the truth of Christ. Jesus said, I am the way and the truth and the life. And when you're walking in his way and living in his life, then his truth also makes sense to you. So it's very important as we think about what shapes your mind to take inventory of my own behavior, to take inventory of your own behavior. And as you seek to share God's truth with others, don't be silly, don't be naive, and think that all you're doing is helping them intellectually. At some point, you may need to talk about the way they're living and get some sin obstacles out of the way before they can believe the truth of God. This is a vital part of knowledge, doing the truth.